Devin and Morgana have been celebrating midlife love by getting married 100 times in 100 countries. They believe grown-up love gets better and more fun, especially for women. Everyone's smarter, wiser. Men are more relationship ready. And if they're not, it's obvious. Forget anything you were told about being too old or too late for love and adventure. Instead, get fresh new tips on dating, relating, and travel to exotic destinations. And best of all, call in for personal guidance, creating crazy, sexy midlife love in your life.
So fess up. Don't you sort of feel like the king when you see that video and all these weddings that you put into motion?
Like a king. I'm not even sure what that means. What I will say is that I think you did a good job on that video, right?
Well, thank you. Thank you. You came from a background with Miramax editing films. So you were a bit critical of my first try, but I took your notes.
Well, but now we're live and we're talking to other human beings.
So I want to make sure. Okay. Hello, welcome to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. We are your co-hosts, married couple Morgana and Devin, married 25 times now, working towards 100, and then we will probably keep going. That was Devin's idea.
Right. That's true, because I like to travel.
Yes.
And I like my wife, too.
Oh.
Right? So there we go. We're starting.
Yeah.
We're going to have a show.
Well, I kept going on these trips to these beautiful places around the world to speak and do business stuff or just travel. And it was so lonely to be in Ireland or Scandinavia or Bali by myself, single in these locations that are screaming romance. And I just kept telling the universe year after year that I wanted to travel the world with the love of my life. And now we do. Devin actually approached me online under the moniker Travel Guy, which was kind of a clue that he liked to travel. Because nothing gets by me.
No.
The subtle nuances.
The subtle nuances, you're all over.
Right.
That's your middle name.
So today, couple things. When the show is just Devin and myself, we have sort of gotten into the practice of pulling tarot cards because I'm like...
She wants to.
Yes. Well, because now that we're doing it on video and also audio, it's a nice little visual thing. We have a camera. Why not do something visual? I'm a fourth generation tarot reader, but my husband is really the expert because he has studied way many more nuances than I have.
Well, the Western mysteries.
Yes.
That's all.
With Kabbalah and astrology.
All
and
true.
Numerology and all that
and,
fun stuff.
And a little bit tongue-in-cheek in
yes.
all of it.
Yeah. Well, that's what makes you
right.
so much
so
fun.
Anyway, we have tarot cards, which my wife pulled.
Yes.
Has pulled already. Did we want to discuss that now, or are we going to talk more about the show?
We're going to...
We'll get back
into... The big overarching topic of today's show is what makes a good man. We are finally going to talk about something really important that we've never discussed on this show before. The movie Karate Kid and the follow-up TV series Cobra Kai.
If you are of a certain vintage.
Like for this show?
Right. If you're a certain vintage and you have not seen Karate Kid, I think it's just a cultural must. Because then all these weird sayings like sweep the leg all of a sudden start making sense.
Wax on, wax off.
All of that kind of stuff. And it does. It's like one of those shows. Like there's not a lot of movies that you can think of that had all these quotable things. I mean, The Wizard of Oz was amazingly quotable. And this was another movie that was just like there's a whole slew of little things throughout. It was like, oh, right. You know, that kind of really informs our culture.
And somehow I made it through the last 40, or I guess since it was set in 89, the last
84.
So I made it through the almost last 40 years without seeing it until two nights ago. And yeah.
In tears.
Yeah, well, of course.
In tears, because it's great classic.
But I have to say, I love Cobra Kai more because
Great.
they're so much more interesting as adults. They're so, the Johnny Lawrence, the bad guy,
Remember
and
spoilers, there are human beings out there who don't know what this is.
yeah, but and then the Karate Kid himself, Daniel LaRusso. Yeah, every so that's all you need to know. They are just so much more complex and interesting and relatable to me now as a middle-aged person watching them as middle-aged people in Cobra Kai is just, I think they're adorable. So, yay, thank you for introducing me to that. And of course, the central question of the movie when they're boys and now the movie, now that they're middle-aged men, is what makes a good man? I think that is the essence of their battle and their karate philosophies is it's really a debate between different definitions of manhood that we see like at the root of almost all of our big political and scientific and social issues today is again this question of what defines a good man. Men
I
have
made a
different
list.
opinions.
I made a
Well,
list,
how
a
good.
definitive list that I wrote down in 10 minutes that
Did
will
you lose
change
it
your
yet?
entire life. No, well, it's in
Okay.
my pocket. How dare you?
Okay. Well,
Please go on.
it has happened before.
That's true. It may happen again. It may
Okay.
not even be in my pocket right now. Then we'll have nothing to discuss for the next 50
You'll just
minutes.
have to make it up on the fly and
I have no
improvise.
problem with that. That's
Okay.
what I did with the list to begin with. So I do. I have a list. I have like seven do's and one don't.
Oh, okay.
But we'll
So,
get to that, right?
and also, we have a phone line to call in with your ideas and opinions on what makes a good man. Because I think we see actually a little bit of it in both of the extremities of Karate Kid and Cobra Kai. So the phone number, if you want to call in, is 888 888 627-6008 to express your opinion or ask a question. And I will try to remember to repeat the question as we go along. But first, we're going to dive into the tarot cards because I brought up the tarot cards. So I want you to just at this moment think of a question. For example, what do you need to know to complete 2020? And leave it behind and create a beautiful 2021. That is like an example of a question. Maybe you have something more specific to you. Devin, do you have an idea for a question?
No. I mean, the question I have typically when I teach, the question I always have is, what do I need to learn about this week? What do I need to learn? And I tend to throw it out as a three-card set. Sort of the first card read is, what is happening now? What is the historical, thing that is accompanying this present moment? And what is the future hold? And when we talk about the future, we're like, since we're talking in the week and we're already on Wednesday, we're really like, what's the thing I'm going to be kind of looking forward to over the next few days? And more importantly, I tend to look at the whole tarot thing, as like a psychological development of humanity, right? In other words, I think these cards are really about sort of like the philosophical, what's part of the human condition that we walk through. And so these are 78 representations of that. And those cards up sort of all kind of color each other when placed next to each other. So it's not really, to me, it's not like, oh, you're going to get, $400 on Thursday. Congratulations. I would love to be able to tell that to everybody. Unless, of course, you need like 8,000. But you get what I'm saying. Like the overarching principle is that this is kind of like we all have these abilities to view our experiences in ways that will ultimately be beneficial, but frequently circumstances and situations surrounding us, and sometimes the way we're feeling and thinking, can cloud that. So we use the cards to kind of like uncover the stuff so we can get, you know, we can get through the difficult times and hopefully rejoice in our victories. How about that for philosophical?
Beautiful. I like a little bit of a bigger time frame than the next few days. And since we are, you know, approaching the end of the year, I'm really deep into thinking about what are the lessons of 2020? Like, what are, in such a difficult year, what are the wins? What are the blessings? What are the learnings? What are the seeds for something beautiful in the future that I can extract from this year so that I am unencumbered and looking forward to next year? So I'd really love to kind of make that transition around now and going deeper over the month. So I'm kind of looking at, I like to look at more from a bigger picture, a month or the churning of the year. And I lay them down a little bit differently. My first card is past, second card is present, third card is future, just chronological. So if you want to ever like play with cards at home, I think the most important thing is that you make it up. I mean, there are lots of clues, lots of books, lots of research that add, like the more you know, the more meaningful it is. But at the end of the day, it's your interpretation and it's your energy and it's your relationship with the cards. Would you agree?
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening. Please go on.
Really?
Just teasing.
Okay.
But yeah, go ahead. Go. So
and also, you know, you can, again, our phone number is 888-627-6008. So I'm going to pull the cards and you may have some feelings or ideas or aha moments about it. So for the past, the card I pulled for the past, drum roll, please, is what number is that? 8 of Swords. So for those of you at home who do not see the card and haven't memorized all the cards, this is a really dramatic looking card where you've got a very, very unhappy woman in a red dress, bound and blindfolded, one foot like in a cold, damp puddle with a castle on a mountain in the background and the 8 swords on either side of her, 3 on one side, 5 on the other. So she's feeling really, really trapped and not very happy. And I can't imagine why anybody would look at 2020 as feeling trapped by painful swords. What I like about the card is there actually is an opening. She just can't see it. She could leave the circle of swords, but she is tied up, looking immobile, looking unhappy with a blindfold over her face and puddles on the ground. So Devin, what would you have to say about the card?
So what I would say about the card is, I think that's probably the most important feature is that there is in fact a way outside. And even though sort of like where she's standing right now, it's not, you know, while it's kind of sort of desolate and muddy in her right immediate moment, and she is surrounded by swords, that yes, if she took off her blindfold and she took off her bounds, her binding, she would notice that there was in fact a way out. Swords tend to go with airy mentality types of things. So, you know, I would say that a lot of the binding and the bondage comes from perhaps a mental obsession, sort of where you kind of think yourself into a bad place, but really, you know, home is sort of like right behind you. The way out is, well, in matter of fact, there even appears to be a way through on the card. So she can get out of there. The red tends to be about power, that, you know, in her dress. So she's probably having a sense of powerlessness that's going on, but she's probably not as powerless as she may feel in this moment, or mentally she may feel trapped in a way. So I would say that, you know, even though it's a very bleak looking card, that there's always sort of a way out of that thing. But it's one of those, I think this is probably a pretty good analogy of what 2020 looked like, because it's a drag. I mean, between the news, I was just talking with a friend today, like, don't watch the news. It's just, I mean, my wife's going to completely go crazy.
Well, no, I don't watch the news.
I know, but there's so much in terms of news. There's so many things to just kind of go, ugh, again, more? What now? That it's just like, this is the stuff that kind of traps you. So between the pandemic, between sort of like politics, between sort of like our day-to-day news, you know, between all that's been going on, certainly social upheaval, et cetera, this is one of those moments that we can kind of hopefully look beyond sort of what we feel we are encompassed in. There's also a Hebrew letter that means fence. So when I see this card, the Hebrew letter Heth is sort of valued at the number of eight. It does mean fence within itself. So when I see this particular card, I tend to see that number. Fence in Hebrew, or Heth spelled out, equals the numerical value of 418. For those who care about such obscure things, 418 connects to this idea of abracadabra, which is sort of like an on high magical word, meaning sort of like invocation. Just think of it as that, as like a really powerful, good force. But sometimes to get at that thing we have are, you know, the things that sort of blind us and the things that bind us and the things that keep us from being that sort of like highest evolution.
Yeah. And I want to say that even though there is a way out and she will get out and she's miserable, she really is tied up. So she is kind of lost. She can't see. She can't just take off the blinders because her, you know, arms and hands are tied up. So there is like a sense of temporary restriction, but it's, you know, a real experience of restriction, definitely obstacles, definitely kind of miserable. So I don't want to negate that with just spiritual bypass. But at the same time, what I love that Devin said is there's also this sense of like magic is also at work. So it's kind of like, you know, one of those alchemical experiences of compression and trial through which is like born what wants to be born. So this can be a really powerful thing. And Devin mentioned the red dress, and I know Devin says that red represents power. So maybe you are more powerful than you experience yourself to be because your circumstances are very, very compelling and challenging. So that is the past. Bye past. Now we come to the present, and regardless of what your circumstances look like, this is what the cards say about the present, which is a really happy, bountiful card. So those of you at home, I'm holding up the 10 of cups, and you see these 10 chalices in a rainbow above a happy married couple and happy dancing children and beautiful verdant land. And I think a house in the background and a river. So there's flow and there's abundance and there's love and happiness. And it's like a wish fulfillment of love and abundance and home life. So there is something going on somewhere right now that is really, really good going on. And so this is a good moment to maybe scan what is going on in your life or your life experience that feels like this rainbow wish fulfilled of love and happiness and home, because that's where the card says we are right now in relation to the question you asked, whether it looks like that or not. Devin, what would you say about the 10 of cups?
What would I say about the 10 of cups? I would say all of that. In other words, this is in general a celebratory card. Things have just happened in a really positive way. The kids are dancing, as you can see, the arms stretched out by the couple that are arm in arm, witnessing this incredible thing above them. So it's a lot of good things. I would also say that at least if you talk to a traditional Kabbalist, frequently a rainbow is seen as an omen of things not being so great, because the idea, much of the Kabbalist philosophy is dealing with this notion of the light, right? And this light is great as the light. The rainbow is a diffraction of the light. In other words, that's where the light comes from, where it's now separated into other things. So meaning, you know, I would say, yes, congratulations. It's a good time. Enjoy yourself. You know, like everything else. In other words, like in this previous card, yes, everybody's, you know, we're bound up. It's terrible. It's a drag. It's not permanent. So the same kind of idea here would be enjoy the abundance, run with it, celebrate, have a great time, and recognize that this is not a permanent thing. So don't rely on, you know, forever now being trapped in this notion of abundance where there's rainbows and you know, cups.
And I'm thinking of Noah's flood. And when God said, you know what, maybe that was overkill and I shouldn't do that again. So I'm going to make a covenant with you that maybe killing off humankind is not such a great idea. And in the story, God sent the rainbow. And since we're coming, you know, through a major plague pandemic, I think maybe a rainbow is a good sign that there is another side. I think of the news of the vaccines coming through. So maybe there is a cause for celebration. That's what I would project onto it, you know, given my perspective on the situation. I'm looking at Devin for confirmation.
No, it's fine. Like, by the way I tend to teach these things, it's like, these are just ideas, right? I think they're ideas that we explore. I think we look at them, how they can be useful to us. Is there something to be learned from it? You know, I mean, the truth of the matter is if you were like, the pandemic's been fantastic for me, then great, then have it be fantastic for you. If all of a sudden at this very moment where Morgana's saying it's rainbows and wonderful and you are having an opposite experience, that's okay. Absolutely. Then we just be conscious of these plethora of things that could be happening.
And, you know, there's so much, you know, the pandemic may have been fantastic for your business and somebody close to you died.
Right.
You know, it's that's just, it's been, you know, a tragic year. And yet, like, I've had a really just abundantly loving life this year. So we all get to have lots of different aspects.
You get the mixed bag.
And we get to see how it makes sense for us. And now the future is the Priestess, card number 2. And this is Major Arcana, which means it's a more important card than the other two. So I kind of dig that it showed up in the future. Now, for me, what I see in this, I tend to personalize it and identify it with the High Priest, identify directly with the High Priestess because I'm intuitive and I professionally have kind of a role of being a facilitator and a guide. But I'm bringing out this card for everybody. So what I see is you have a woman with a hat that looks sort of like a moon with a full moon and a crescent. And you also have, she's in front of a backdrop with a bunch of pomegranates, which is fertility. And it's sort of like Persephone, the goddess of the underworld, is represented by pomegranates. And she's got a crescent moon at her foot. And I think, is that a cat? It's hard to tell with my, no, that's just interesting wrinkles in her kind of cloud-like waterfall waves of the dress pouring, her blue-white dress pouring over her knee. She's in blue and white, which is purity and reminiscent of the images of Mother Mary in church iconography. She even has a cross, which can be a Christian cross or a holy cross, on her chest. So there's a connection to the divine all about her. There's a lot of just goddess intuition imagery around her, kind of between worlds, veils, especially with the pomegranates and that connection to the goddess of the underworld. And then she's between two columns. One has a B on it, one has a J. Devin will have to tell us what that means, but one is black and one is white. So there's a real notion of duality and balance, like not favoring dark or light, but in between worlds. So lots of ways we can interpret that for the future. Balance, I would really love to see divine connection. But I think balance is a really big piece of what we need moving forward in the world. So, okay, so Devin, you take over. What do you see?
Okay, so, you know, these two pillars are of Joaquin and Boaz, which are sort of the two pillars that before sort of like the ancient rabbi would walk between these two pillars in order to go into the Holy of Holies to say the divine name of God. So it's sort of like, it's not just merely like, oh, here's these things. They're actually really quite important. And I think if you were to look in sort of like to the Masons and ceremonialists and things like that, these two pillars are really actually quite important. So they do represent sort of like opposites. And there is sort of a sense of balance of this union of these two opposite forces working together. Yes, the high priestess is, she's sort of like the path that connects two of the top ideas on the Tree of Life. And so she's like a major player. Yes, there's some elements of fertility, not in the same way that the Empress card would represent them, but important.
Not sexual, but still fruitful.
Right. Right, like potentially capable of fruitfulness might be a better way to say it. In other words, she's not pregnant at this stage, like in some versions of the Empress she would be. But I think this is sort of like a gateway type of card. Mm-hmm. And the gateway we're talking about is sort of like way high up on the thing, right? The gateway into sort of like the spiritual high-mindedness of the self, maybe even above that. So I think, in other words, where I would put this is sort of like the marriage between, I'm going to use the language of the Tree of Life for a moment, which is Chokmah and Bina. And those are sort of like the top two spheres or two of the three top two spheres on the tree. And basically you can look at Bina as sort of like the creative force, the divine creative energy in the universe. And Chokmah is sort of like the all potential of that universe. So they're like these two things that haven't necessarily manifested, but they have all of this incredible force behind them to do really sort of anything that they want. And so the high priestess is that person who's standing in between these things. Again, when you go into the Holy of Holies, that's where you're saying the divine name of God. And it was not just like anybody could go in there, and it's not like anybody could just do it at any point. It was like there was this one day a year, this one time a year, this one person a year who had this ability to go do that. We're going back into deep biblical history on this stuff, but that idea of the pillars has sort of remained, you know, today.
Devin, love of my loins, you keep shaking the camera when you do that.
Oh, sorry. I'll put my arms behind me.
Okay.
But yeah, so I think it's kind of like one of those threshold cards where there's lots of positive force, but you also have to remember that it's quite possible that somebody can take that creative force and do something not great with it.
Well, knowing what we know, at least in the United States, I would say that this is on like the larger scale. That there is more polarity in the future. It's not going to disappear in 2021. So I think that the guidance is to walk the middle path and discern what is true, because there is extremity going on, but she's at peace in the center of it all. And any other tricks?
Well, it's really, the card isn't about the extremities. The card's about the high priestess who's standing between these two opposing forces, right? And but keep in mind, even in the context, those opposing forces sort of represent kind of like this pathway that you can walk. So yes, balance, I think, is important. But I also think it's kind of, for me anyway, the way I tend to look at it is like a threshold card. And you can, there's a lot of positive energy, but you get to use that energy however you may.
Yeah. So even between these extremes, there is beauty and there is fruit. And it's all potential. Like this tiny crescent moon is the potential of a full moon, and these pomegranates are potential. Now that I've interrupted you, did you want to interrupt me back?
No.
This is how our relationship works.
Yes, I stay quiet unless I'm spoken to.
No, that's not at all true. Not
but it's an
remotely.
Illusion I can present on this live audience.
And everybody can think, oh my God, what a noble, long-suffering man
he
is.
Oh, it's dreadful. It's dreadful. How did you know? How did you read my mind? You read my heart is what you did.
Thing.
I know. Please. Please go on. Okay. So where were we?
We were talking about Karate Kid and Cobra Kai.
Right.
Why do you love those movies?
Well, okay. So, I mean, certainly there is just sort of like the good versus evil sort of thing, right? We've got this little twig of a kid who's new in town, who's getting roughed up by
the
hipsters.
And you don't relate to that at all.
Oh, you know, who cares about me? But in the story, we have this sort of adorable guy, right? Who is...
Excuse me.
In trouble, and he's got no dad, and he finds Mr. Miyagi. I mean, there's just so many different elements of this thing. In other words, there's kind of this mild, idea of standing up for yourself. It's sort of about fighting for whatever your truth is. I think there is this sense of like, how do we handle disagreements and challenges? And then, of course, you have on the opposite side, right? You've got the bonsai trees on one side, and then on the other side, you have sort of like clearly combat, you know, super deluxe Vietnam, you know, mercenary character who, you know, represents this other dojo, this other sort of philosophy, which is like strike first, strike hard, no mercy.
Well, it reminds me of the idea of chivalry introduced in the Knights of the Round Table, where before that, the value was might is right. And that's Cobra Kai. Might is right. And it's very black and white. And there's a real fear. And that comes up more in the series, that if you have mercy, you're dead. And then on the other extreme, the Miyagi dojo, the Miyagi school of karate, is that the purpose of manhood and this study is in defense of goodness and to protect others, which is the Knights of the Round Table sort of creed, not to be a bully, but to be a hero. But both sides of them see themselves as heroes. And that's what I love about the series, because in the movie, the bad guys are just the bad guys. Ooh, bad guys. And you don't see their wounds or their humanity or their struggles or their striving to and the reasons that they made the choices and chose the teacher that they did. And so they're far more lovable in the series. Oh, and by the way, Devin pointed out to me that one of the I'm gonna mention that it does appear to me that one of the episodes was written for a specific actor who was sick. And I'm just thinking, wow, the people who made that series, what good people they are. Cause I know a lot of actors, and that episode may have been necessary for that guy to get his health insurance that year. So it really, really just seems like the people who make that show are good people. Like, I don't know who you are. I didn't pay attention to the credits, but I'm really, really loving the show.
Well, it's a fun show. I don't want to give spoilers at all.
That's my job.
That is my wife's job. She's very capable of that. But yeah, it's a fun show. But so I guess what we're all leading to in this conversation is we're talking about these ideas of, wow, time just slides by. What does it mean to be a good man? And so I have a lot of thoughts, and of course we're gonna share our time in talking about these thoughts. And so I wrote down, first off, when I started writing these down, and I did not take a lot of time, so this is not certainly far. It's not my definitive list. It's not a definitive list, but it's like the idea of going into it, as I do with most of the things that I do, is that you can do these things or you can focus on these kinds of ideas without having money or a job or, you know, whatever, like the money, property, and prestige. You don't need to have a particular career to be a good man. It's like, so there's a story. It's not a story.
But that's interesting that you say that, because a lot of people in our culture will say you have to have a good job or you have to have a lot of money and provide for your family and you have to fulfill
I was going to answer that right now.
Okay.
So there is a musician named Victor Wooten, and he is probably one of the best bass players, best musicians alive. He's an incredible player, but he's also kind of a philosophical he's a good person. So one of the things that he was talking about, because he, as you might imagine, he gets up and performs constantly. And he was, you know, the main question he gets asked by everybody is, how do I be a great musician like you? And his response is, we don't need more great musicians. We already have a gajillion of them. Really what we need are good people. And so, of course, how do you get there? So I was going to start with sort of like my list that is, I've written down, so if I have to refer to it, I totally will.
And if you want to call in with your opinion on what makes a good man, our number is 888-627-6008. Do you have your list?
Yes, I put it back in my pocket. I'm gonna talk about the first piece. Okay. So going back to really talk about Morgana's question, which is, but don't you need a good job? And don't you need all these things? Well, you know, sort of. But I don't think you need to necessarily have those things in order to be a good man. Now, that doesn't mean that there are people surrounding a good person that say, well, okay, you might be a good person, maybe, but really you need a job and you need all these other things that society sort of deems that you need. And maybe you need them because, well, people like to eat and people like to be, you know, in shelter rather than out on the street or something like that. So, yes, we need those things. But if you don't have those things, that doesn't mean you can't be a good person. It doesn't mean you can't be a meaningful person. You know what I mean? Like, I think one of the things that we do is we look at money as a scorecard. And so it's like, oh, if you have a lot of money, then you're doing really well on the scorecard. When you talk about ideas of goodness, it's a much more nebulous thing. So in making my little list, I think that for me, the takeaway is really about what can I do even if I don't have anything? What can I maintain in order to at least kind of sort of what I believe part of the goodness is sort of like developing good self-esteem and good consciousness about yourself, right? So even when things are terrible, and because we're all going to go through setbacks, that when those setbacks occur, we can rely upon our character to help move us through the next parts of life. So with all that said, I hope that made some kind of sense. So with all that said, I think probably the first on my list, it may not be the most important, but it was the first thing that I wrote down. And that is integrity. And so the integrity thing brings up a whole slew, because I've had this conversation many times where people have lots of feelings about what integrity is supposed to mean, kind of like goodness, right? Well, but I have a lot of money, so I'm good, right? Integrity is one of those things that I think, like, the way I see it is sort of like this thing that kind of sits in the middle of your chest. And the integrity is where sort of like I know more or less what's right or wrong or what's acceptable or not acceptable for me, right? So when I go outside of those lines, I tend to not feel good about myself because really this is the area that I need to focus on. And it's going to be different for everybody. Everybody's going to have a different set of priorities. Like I think somebody can desire to be a billionaire and just have, you know, truckloads of cash falling in the sky at all times. And they still can be within their own integrity. The trick is that I can not feel that I'm within integrity, but pretend that I am. And that's kind of the gray area. I think we can have this sort of like sense of self and sense of self-understanding of what's right and wrong for me, and then blur those lines, even though that I may not be doing the right or wrong thing. So when I say have integrity, really what it's mean is it's more about connecting with your, like, who are you? Connecting with that part.
But don't even criminals have their own code of ethics that allows them to feel in integrity even when they do horrible things?
Well, okay. So if you were to talk about, and I think I just realized my shirt's on backwards. So my father would have been sort of like the honor among thieves type of guy, right? So there you're talking, oh, that's integrity, right? Honor among thieves. So it's sort of yes and sort of no. It depends. In other words, your integrity doesn't require other thieves to validate the integrity. Your behavior gets to, in other words, you behaving in ways that actually feed you in a positive way. That integrity is all that's really needed. Remember, this is one component of multiple pieces that, like, I believe, in my humble opinion, allow us to kind of be a good person walking out in the world. So if we are surrounding ourselves with thieves, that will sort of like help massage us. Because one of the joys of being a human being is that we get these two roads. And one of the roads is filled with broccoli, steamed broccoli with no topping or sauce or anything, not even salt, because we don't want hypertension. And on the other side is Snickers bars. And so the draw to the Snickers bar is far greater than the idea of steamed broccoli and nothing else. That sounds dreadful.
Unless you knew my vegan friends.
Well, this isn't a moral distinction. What I'm saying is more often than not, most of us have these two choices to make. Well, I'm going to go with this easy path, or I'm going to go the delicious path, or I'm going to go to this other one because it feels right or whatever, right? And then there's this other path. And that other path, I would say, has nothing to do with honor among thieves. I think it has to do with sort of like really honoring who it is that you are and who it is that you're meant to be. And that's a much trickier thing than just saying, oh, I want to get along with the people, right? Because if you're getting enough people applauding you for eating all the Snickers bars, it may feel good while you're eating the Snickers bars and people applauding you going down the path. But those people applauding you may not be around. If all you ate was Snickers bars, eventually many health risks will happen, right? That's not, to me, a big debate. But I think if you go down that path where it's just like, well, everybody's telling me to go down the path, I would say that may be in line. It's conceivable it could be in line with integrity, your personal integrity. But I also think it's very easy to be led astray because people are applauding you along that path.
Well, integrity is one of my highest values. And when I think of the word integrity, I think of the word integer, like in math. The integers are the numbers that can only be multiplied by itself in one. Like there can only be 1 7 and there can only be 1 11, and you can't really break it up. It's like a solid wholeness, a oneness. And so when I think of integrity, I think of like everything is aligned and one and true, so you don't have bits of you fighting against each other. Does that make sense to you?
I'm with you enough.
Okay.
So let me.
That's why we're married.
Right. So what I was going to say is that, because I've been in recovery for years, that's not a big secret. It's not an important thing. During that process, I've known loads of gang members and people who've been in prison, and lots of people that are like piecing together their lives, right? Mm-hmm. Some have been doing it for many years. Some of them are new to it and all that other stuff. Very seldom. And I mean, I've known some rough characters. All of those rough characters are actually at their core. They were products of environment. They were products of lack of opportunity. They were products of the wrong group of people applauding them down the wrong path because, well, but this seems to be the path I should be going down. So what ends up happening is the more you go down that path of the Snickers bars, and I say that with love. I love me some Snickers bars. Like if I could, I would just eat Snickers bars, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So if I'm going down the path of the Snickers bars, at some point, I start losing complete sight of the other path at all. Mm. Like I can hear, if I'm standing at the Y, I can say, okay, I can have some Snickers bars, but maybe I should kind of temper that with some steamed broccoli too, because that would be good.
So if you joined a karate dojo where all the values were bullying and no mercy, and that was what was rewarded and confirmed around you every day.
Right.
And we see this in adult worlds and the polarity and division in our country today where, oh, they are the bad guy. They are the bad guy. And our circles reaffirm that.
Right. And so what I'm saying is that's about community. And I would argue, because another thing that I talk about, we're not going to get to it at all today.
But let's try to get into one more of your points before we run out of
time. I have some other things to say. Don't worry. We'll get to other points. We have time.
Okay.
We have time. So I forgot what I was going to say now because of your help. Congratulations. Congratulations. So we have these two points. And if you start going down the one path and you start losing sight that there in fact is broccoli or that there's another way to go, it's very easy to lose sight completely. One of the things that I've heard from people who've spent, time in prison and times really getting into areas of life that are, really challenging. In other words, it makes life far worse and more difficult. Is that they've strayed so far, they say this a lot, they ended up doing things they never believed that they could possibly do, right? Because what ends up happening is once you start ignoring this thing, right, this sort of like set part of who it is that you are, all of a sudden you can start making rationalizations to carry you further and further away from yourself. And then, of course, once you're out in the woods, where it's just Snickers land and there's nothing else to choose from, but varying degrees of Snickers, it's hard to ever get back to a place to find sort of like appropriate fuel that will help you get you where you want to go in a better way.
So how would that relate to a guy who's dating and wants to be a good man?
Well, say more.
Well, like, for example, I've dated guys who were kind of, we have rape culture, guys who are aggressive, guys who push, guys who lash out, guys who lie and cheat on you and are just difficult to be around. And there's so many women I know who just want to write off all men in general because they've been hurt, even though thank God there are still, a world of good guys out there. But so how do good guys end up out of integrity in the dating world? And I'm asking this as a woman, as if I were still out dating, because
right.
I was that woman for 45 years. How does she find a good man?
Right. Okay. So you're putting the cart way before the horse.
But let's run with that.
I know you do. So let's talk about that for a moment.
Yeah.
So I think part of the problem is that it's this belief system that we're all one thing or another thing. Like I've kind of narrowed it down to, steamed broccoli and Snickers bars just to kind of illustrate a point. But let's say if we were on a scale, I'm an individual and you could rate me on a scale of 1 to 10. And let's say I'm a 6.5. Great. Right. Above average. Wonderful. Or a 3.5. It doesn't really matter. So you rate me that. So how does that, where does that number come from? Is it just because I'm 6.5 in all areas of my life across the board? No, it's what it means is I'm good at one thing. I'm not so good. Like for me, like I play a bunch of instruments. I'm a better guitar player than I am a piano player. But if you judged me by only me playing piano, then I'm kind of a dud, right? I'm probably a better bass player than I am a guitar player. And I'm a worse mandolin player than a banjo player. But my point is that we're all in different areas of our life at any given point in time, right? We could start out at a 10. Oh, I'm a 10 over here, but then five crummy things happen. And then my outlook on life becomes like a 2, right? So it's constantly moving and changing. And I think we get into this idea of goodness that everybody else is going to like me. And I don't think you can use that. So if women are upset at who they're dating, I think part of the process is that women have to kind of look at themselves and go, okay, well, what am I doing in order to A, attract this kind of person, right? They could, that, you know, and B, they have to look at, well, what it is, what are they judging? Now, if we're talking about, okay, so you're talking about rape culture, which is a whole concept that goes way beyond how do you become a good person rather than how do you create a good society, right? Rape culture talks about a much bigger picture. So when we're talking about be a good person, I can't fix society. What I can do is I can go out and be a good person, right? I can look at the components that will allow me to start being the best person I can be. And when I start being the best person I can be, I will start developing what I believe to be is positive self-esteem and self-image, which means I get to go out into the world with a measure of confidence. If things don't go my way, that doesn't mean I'm going to throw myself off a cliff. What it means is I'm going to, A, strengthen skills that need to be improving without taking it personal. Right. So if let's say I go out into the world and it doesn't go my way, I'm not going to go take it out on the next person I meet because I may be feeling somewhat inadequate in a particular moment. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So I would argue, to kind of talk directly to your question, is that I think water seeks its own level to some degree. Like, I believe that there's a certain harmony in the universe. And so that harmony is sort of like, I think part of the reason why we need to be in relationships, whether it be romantic or otherwise, is that I think we need to see a reflection of ourselves to some degree.
I would also say that if you're attractive, you attract everything. So just because you attract a dud or someone who isn't nice to you is not a reflection that you're not good enough. When you're attractive, you attract everything. And what is a mirror of your relationship with yourself is who you choose to keep. So if you go on 30 first dates and 25 of them are crap, well, improve your screening, A, improve your screening. But if your only job is to extract yourself from the bad dates safely and not see them again, and you've succeeded. So we as human beings attract everything because the universe just wants to see what we want or what we choose. And then we get to make the decision about what belongs, what level we experience ourselves at in our choices of what is in alignment at that moment and what we choose. So there.
So right off the bat, the differences between men and women have been demonstrated in this very exact moment, like, for sure. It's actually sort of amazing. And it's, but I mean, I think that's okay. Like, again, this kind of goes back to what can you control? And at some point, I can go march on Washington. I can go fight for what I believe in. And that's like, great, go do that. But I think most of the power that you have in terms of change has to do with your own self, right? And your own measure of consciousness about what it is that you can do. And maybe part of that consciousness is realizing that you have the ability to go fight the power on the steps of Washington. Go do that, right? But I think some of the easier changes is becoming about dealing with yourself, right? Yeah. In other words, what for me was a really important lesson is that my personal responsibility and doing things that I knew was right in this sort of core thing had more value than my attempts to fix everybody else around me to have them do what I thought was right. And so that's to me what this kind of, you know, this is point one. I have other points, but we'll never get to them. Like, what was that other thing? Right, 11 points. We got to like point 1A.
And then you lost your list.
I lost my list, but we abandoned the topic. But we'll get back to these topics because I think they're really important.
We do have a guest next week, Rhonda Britton.
Rhonda Britton?
Yeah, Rhonda Britton, who I've known since like 1996. So like most of her coaching life, she won a ton of Emmys as the first star of an on television coaching series called Starting Over, which she not only starred in, but wrote and produced. And I just love her. I love her to bits. She wrote the book Fearless Living. She's created a whole coaching school around Fearless Living. So I think, you know, I said to her when I asked her to be on the show, I think fearless living is the best topic to bring to love and dating because there's just so much at stake with our hearts and our wounds. And I think that'll be so much fun. And then we'll get back to, and I will try to allow Devin to like, I will really try to let Devin get deeper and farther than just one point.
Never happen. And it's fine. We'll get there. We'll get to them all at some point.
It's aspirations, it's resolutions for 2021.
So Rhonda Britton will be here next week. That'll be great.
And
I remember her. I've met her.
You've met her a million times.
A million times. Okay, well, that should be good.
A lot of times.
Right. Okay. So we're down to a minute.
Nicest lady.
We're down to a minute.
Yeah. So what do you want to say?
About what?
I'm giving you the floor.
That's impossible. Okay. So anyway, I would argue step number one to being a good person is recognizing that you have this kind of thing where you have a sense of knowing what's right or wrong for you.
Why is that hard for guys?
I think it's hard for everybody. I think because, we're down to 30 seconds. Well, then, you know, I just think it's hard for everybody. I think because we're, especially now, because we are mired with distractions of just media and community and trying to be good people. That's the thing, is that part of it is that we're trying to be good and nobody knows what good is. So we're going to talk more about that next time, right?
Yeah, in 2 weeks. You are listening to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love Radio. Go to crazysexymidlifelove.com to see our first 11 weddings and join our Crazy Sexy Midlife Love family. And we will be back next week, Wednesday, 5 p.m. Pacific time, with more Crazy Sexy Midlife Love and the spectacular Rhonda Britton and Fearless Living. Mwah!
Thank you for listening to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. Please sign up to join our free love family at crazysexymidlifelove.com. To get alerts to live shows, call in and ask questions, or just listen in. And ladies, don't forget to download Devin's free ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men and Other Secrets Marriage-Minded Women Need to Know. Also available at crazysexymidlifelove.com.